This is the Mason Vera Payne Show, your go-to lifestyle program, covering everything from technology and gaming to movies, TV shows, and pop culture to the supernatural and beyond. Brought to you by WGNRadio.com with your host, the unabridged millennial, Mason Vera Payne.
Unabridged millennial Mason Payne here live from the MVP studios in Chicago, and thank you for tuning in. I'm a huge fan of the Marvel vs. Capcom series by Capcom, and the game combines my two favorite things, comic book characters and what-if scenarios. So what if Ryu from Street Fighter fought Wolverine from the X-Men? What if Magneto faced M. Bison? This Versus series has been around for years and is one of the most polarizing fighting games on the market. Joining me today to speak about the history of this Versus series and where it currently stands is assistant editor at EventHubs.com, John Guerrero. Thanks for joining me, John. Could you tell me a little bit about yourself and your background in the gaming community?
For the longest time, I kind of just went by what I was supposed to do. My mom woke me up for kindergarten on the first day, and I didn't realize it was time to go to kindergarten, even though we'd been talking about it. I just kind of went on autopilot, and I did it. I went to school all the way up through high school, and then it was time to go to college. And I was like, I don't know what to do. I have to go to college, so what am I going to do? I guess I'll do movies. So I went in for film. Finished college, didn't really learn as much as I could have, and that's a regret, but at the time I didn't really care, right? And then moved out to L.A. I got an internship at a stand-up comedy / improv theater, so I was working there. But at the same time, I was also into video games, and specifically Street Fighter IV. And SoCal, the area that I was in, has one of the best scenes in the entire country. And so I would go to this super arcade where people would meet and they would have the best competition. And I was doing fairly decent, so I got a lot of stream time, and I became somewhat known within the fighting game community. People knew kind of like, you know, my face and stuff because I would be on one of the most popular tournament streams. So then I wasn't really doing much as far as pursuing a career in media. I was doing like improv here and there, but not really all that much. And I found I didn't even really read Event Hubs. That's the site that I work for. I didn't really read it that much. I wasn't really into going and reading about the news. I was just more into competing. But my friend did, and he said, hey, you know, Event Hubs is opening up, and I know you like to write when you know, I write like sketch comedy and things like that. So, like, you should apply because, you know, why not? It's part of your passion. So my hobby of writing and then my hobby of video games were actually melded into one with this. And I got to actually, like, I applied, and I didn't get the job the first time. But the guy that did get the job, actually, his schedule didn't work out. So they called me back, and they said, come on onto the team. We've seen you. We know that, you know, we've seen you on the streams and whatnot, and you know, we've seen what you do, and we know that you know what you're talking about. Like, let's do another interview. And I got the job and been doing that ever since.
So when you applied, did you go immediately for the assistant editor, or was it like you worked your way up?
They went through kind of a process of continuing to develop the site and giving actual titles and whatnot to like all of the employees. But as the site developed, I kind of just was on as like one of the editors. And eventually it just became like I guess my big boss kind of started making these positions. And so I'm like kind of like second in command as far as the editorial scene goes. There's my other boss who's been on for much longer than I have, Dream King. And so he's kind of like the senior guy. But, man, I got to tell you, though, the work environment that I'm in, I mean, it's all virtual. We do everything over Skype. There's no, like, official headquarters. But, like, my employees and my employers, it feels way more like family and way more like friends than it does like, you know, work boss, you know, and employee relationship that can be kind of like cold and sterile. Like I've worked in corporate for a long time, and this is much, much better. So it's a great job through and through.
Okay, so you said that you went to this event, you're going to write an article about it and stuff. What else do you guys do? Do you just do exclusively tournaments or just games?
The only thing that we're kind of boxed into is the fighting game genre. So we'll do pretty much anything that has to do with competitive fighting games. So whether that be, you know, writing the news that's happened, any kind of announcements of, like, maybe a new character or something like that, or like, a top player will come out with an opinion on, like, the strengths of the characters, and it'll be different than what's kind of generally accepted. We'll talk about that kind of a thing. Or if somebody has, like, a really good artistic, like, image gallery or something that they've, like, drawn of the characters, just some fan art, things like that, we'll share that, too. So usually this isn't, like, the official like title or anything, but if someone asks me that, I'll say it's kind of like a fighting game culture and news website. So just anything that's going on that people might want to hear about, we're like the hub for that, right? So Event Hubs.
Oh, okay, cool. You know, one of the biggest games out there right now, at least I think, besides Street Fighter, is the Marvel Versus series. And Capcom makes them. How did this come about?
Wow. So I am not like, I'm a Street Fighter player, first of all, but Marvel is such a big and important thing that even though it wasn't something that I really played, I dabbled around with it, but I never pursued anything competitive in it. It was like a real unignorable like entity, if you will, right? So it's just very much there. Whenever there's a Street Fighter tournament, there's sure to be a Marvel tournament. And now, yes, this will be a huge release. But I had to do a little bit of my own research to get like an idea of how it all kind of began. Because I think a lot of us, at least in my general age range, like kind of 30-year-olds or so, remember seeing in the arcades back in the day, there would be that Street Fighter game. But then there would also be, after a little while, these fighting games with X-Men characters and then also Street Fighter characters, the ones that you remembered from playing Street Fighter, like Ryu and Chun-Li and things like that. So I guess they originally popped up in arcade form, and people liked them a lot, and they would just be, you know, in the random, like, laundromats or a pizza place or whatever, but you'd have it there, and it would be something that it might actually draw you in to go to there, you know, if you're trying to choose where you wanted to go to lunch. Well, hey, let's go to the pizza place because it's got that arcade. And they were so popular that they ported them onto, like, the consoles so people could play them at home on things like their Super Nintendos and Sega Genesis and things like that. But, yeah, I think it was the early 90s, around 94, I think X-Men Children of the Atom came out. And that was actually, it was a Capcom game, but it only featured X-Men characters. So that was interesting. And there, from there on out, it's been Marvel and Capcom, Marvel versus Capcom series.
With the Children of the Atom one, Akuma was a hidden character. Do you know why he was in there and not somebody else?
These kind of things are hard to track down. There's not a lot of documented history of development of video games. Like, some of the producers are still alive, and I know, like, Scythe's really in-depth article where they talk to the creators of Street Fighter II, and they talk to each person and like, from the developers to, like, the legal team on just the kind of things that they went through. And so they have this whole history of Street Fighter II. It's very, very interesting. And I'll go back and read different parts of it from time to time just for, like, refreshers and things like that. But as far as this goes, like, I would imagine that Capcom was still a young company and had just with Street Fighter II. It was, like, crazy. This game, like, took off. And there was a Street Fighter before it, Street Fighter I, that almost no one ever talks about. But that was there, and it wasn't as much of a success. It was innovative, but it was very difficult to play and ultimately not very fun. But Street Fighter II was a whole other thing. It just took everyone by surprise, and it was the coolest thing ever. You got to fight with your friends and stuff, and it was a form of, like, a relationship and communication with people that a lot of people that would, you know, outside of, like, boxing, don't really have. You know, wrestling and boxing, and a lot of the people that ended up flocking to this kind of thing probably weren't the most athletic, you know. Not to say that there aren't athletic people in the scene, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So I would imagine that as things got started here, Capcom wanted to put their stamp of their, like their brand new but fast-moving thing that they had in Street Fighter, put that in some of their other games. And the guest characters in fighting games from other franchises, even sometimes, like, out of a movie, like Star Wars or something like that, you'll have Darth Vader or Yoda pop up in your game. But guest characters have become a very regular thing, usually hidden, and it's kind of fun. It's like a little Easter egg. But my idea would be that Capcom wanted to put their name somewhere in this game because if it took off and it was exciting and people really liked it, they wanted them to remember Street Fighter because that Street Fighter was kind of, like, for all intents and purposes, the first real fighting game. It might not have been the actual first, but it was the one that people remember as the first that got the whole genre started and sent it in the direction that it went.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. Street Fighter is probably the only one that I remember growing up, and especially E. Honda doing his little hand move. It was like I think that and Chun Li, those were the easiest ones to play because you could just spam the hell out of it.
Just mash it. Yeah, exactly.
You know, when it comes to Marvel versus Capcom and Marvel versus Capcom 2, 2 had a huge roster. Why did it change between the two games?
Might have just been. I couldn't tell you how incredibly successful the first one was. I do know it was successful enough to spawn a sequel. And my guess would be, and I don't know if this is 100% accurate, because, again, it's hard to get the actual, like, thought processes of the developers. They weren't as, you know, documented as other things that our society finds, like, more importance in or just more interest in. But and hopefully that will change someday as gaming continues to develop. But, like, I think it was just, like, hey, we're kind of on a roll. And we now have this crossover series. People are seeming to really like it. It's popular. Let's just overload it with as much as we can. It had a massive roster, and I don't think that kind of thing will ever happen again. Now the approach is to bring out a fairly small roster, not tiny. Like, the new Marvel will have 30 characters to begin with, so that's still pretty good. But the Marvel character selects are usually a little bit bigger. It'll just be like a smaller roster, and they'll release DLC characters that you have to buy. They're really jumping into this whole, like, games as a service that you continue to basically pay for as you go. That's just kind of the direction gaming is going in. So I don't know that the rosters will ever get to be the size that MVC2 was. But, yeah, I think it was just a time where they had everything going for them. They're like, let's just make it as big and as crazy as we possibly can and just kind of find our limits there.
You know, when it comes to the Marvel series, too, Capcom always has kind of like their cookie-cutter characters, Ryu, Chun-Li, Morgan, you know. How come you don't see anything else? Like, what game was it? Dino Crisis. I mean, that was theirs. Why don't they put that into Marvel?
There are two huge entities that go into creating these games. It's Capcom USA, and then there's Capcom Japan. I don't know anything specific here. This is just what gets spitballed around the community from those that have half of an insight here and half of an insight there, or that maybe have been in the company before and are no longer with them. But there seems to be something of a division between the two. Capcom USA is more about today's thought process. Capcom Japan is much more conservative and not as willing to bend and change and do different things, evolve with the times. Capcom has done a great job of making great characters over the years. So it is kind of sad to see them reuse a lot of the same ones. But, like, in the case of like, Ryu and Chun-Li and Akuma, they are so synonymous with Capcom in so many ways, and they are trademarks. They are branding automatically. So to put those characters in there, people recognize, and the fans that really like to play, you'll find fans of those characters that I just mentioned everywhere. They've just fallen in love with these characters. It's to the point where they're expected to have. In the new Street Fighter, Sagat is not one of the playable characters, and people are almost to the point where they, like, expect it to happen. So if you're Capcom, they've just found a good formula with including these kind of core fighters in almost every game that they have their, you know, influence on, and it's really worked out for them. So if it's not broken, don't fix it, you know?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, when it comes to Ryu and Chun-Li and even maybe Bison or Akuma, those are kind of like their mascot characters. So I can see it's almost like a package deal. But still, it would be nice to see like Balrog or, you know what I mean, or Blanka.
They might start doing something like that because we're seeing even more crossovers. And we're seeing it from other groups like, well, it was Akuma again, but they had him guest star the newest Tekken. And that was such a huge thing, you know, when it came out. And other series like Soul Calibur have had very, very varied guests. And in Mortal Kombat, Soul Calibur had, like, Star Wars characters. Mortal Kombat has had, like, horror icons like Freddy Krueger and Jason and things like that, and Alien and Predator. So it's beginning to be more of a meshing of the entire culture that a lot of these, like, the people in the FGC are going to be fans of. And that's really cool. So maybe not yet, but in the near future, we'll see more variety from more places, at least within the Capcom universe.
Oh my God, you gave me such hope. Could you imagine if they had like characters from Bloody Roar or Primal Rage in there? That would be great.
Probably coming down more as it becomes more of a corporate money grab, which, like, that's how business works and how business works, like, in today's age. So I'm not mad at them for it. But the more they do that, the more it's going to be like, we're just going to do what's safe and what we know makes money. We're not going to take as many chances. I hope that it doesn't get too bad like that, but I won't be surprised if it does.
I don't know. I think it, you know, some people would be like, oh, you're ruining something so wonderful. And to me, it's like, you know, evolution of this, like add more characters. I kind of like the whole idea that, you know, you could mismatch your team and you can basically Rickroll over somebody if they've never seen this character before. I like that. I like the concept of it, you know. But when it comes to the, you know, Marvel versus Capcom, the new one that's coming out, Infinite, have you had a chance to play that one yet?
Yeah, I've messed around with it a little bit, just to get like a basic feel for it and everything.
Well, I'm not as lucky, and I'm sure other people aren't either. But they have
the Infinity Stones, yeah.
Right? So how is that going to work? Instead of X Factor, is it just as impactful, or do you feel like X Factor was a little better?
X Factor gets a lot of flack, a lot of it, because it was super powered in a lot of ways. It allowed for a lot of things, and like it was just a boost in like all of your character's attributes for a short time. But it was a comeback mechanic, which have become commonplace in fighting games now, like super combos and ultras and X Factor, things like that. The Infinity Stones come in to replace this, and where the X Factor was one single thing that you could do with any character and it was the same general effect, the Infinity Stones are from the Marvel Universe that's actual, you know, it's part of the lore. There are six of these different stones that do different things and have effects on different, you know, parts of the universe. And so each one of these gives your characters special abilities. So they might make them stronger. It might make them faster. It gives them like an extra projectile that homes in on the foe. It steals life from the opponent. It has like a special grab that you can do when you're close by. It refills your meter gauge. Things like that. There's six of them, first of all. But they also grant abilities to characters that wouldn't normally have that. So, like, you might play, like, a slow-moving grappling character like the Hulk or someone like that, and you're not used to the Hulk, like, having any ability to move fast. That's, like, his weakness. But you might grab an Infinity Stone if you wanted to and pair that with Hulk, and now all of a sudden you have Hulk that can do all Hulk things, but he can also move really quickly or shoot a projectile or something like that. And that changes the landscape in such a big way. Well, right now there are 30 characters that you can choose from. And then there are six stones. So a player could potentially use any combination of that. And I'm not going to do the math right now in my head, but that's a lot of potential to express yourself as opposed to just having a character that has its set course of, or its set, like, arsenal of tools and combos and potential, and then add an X factor and make them do it faster and stronger. The possibilities to, like I said, express yourself as a player through your characters are very, very large. I would almost say infinite, but I don't want to be a corny joke maker, you know. So there's a lot to it in this game, and so we're going to see, like, no character played quite the same way, I don't think.
Do you think that the growing popularity of esports has influenced the changes that we'll see in Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite?
Yes. To answer your question, I do think that having this esports approach to things is definitely influencing how things are being approached, how they're being made, when they're being released. The connectivity that players are able to reach each other if games are cross console available or things like that or I'm sorry, games are on multiple different consoles, like Xbox and PlayStation and PC, things like that. It's all going to come down to what brings the most dollar.
I've been reading a lot of comments about, you know, whenever there's an article about the new Marvel game, people are kind of on the fence about it, like, oh, it doesn't look very good, or, oh, you know, I'm going to wait a couple of months to see what happens. Why do you think people have that kind of expectations when it comes to this game in particular?
Well, it was announced in December of last year, and hype skyrocketed just because we had a title, we had a name, and we had a quick little intro, no gameplay really. But we saw that a new Marvel was announced, and that was enough. Then we saw more and more of it, and there were a couple of fiascos along the way for Marvel vs. Capcom in terms of PR. Chun-Li, like we talked about, one of the most famous characters in the all of fighting games, probably the most famous female character in fighting games. Her face, like the design, was really bad. She looked like messed out or something like that. And it was like, and her eyebrows were weird and like halfway there, and it just looked really sloppy. And you go, you know, I could understand if this was like some startup company that's doing this for the first time, and you're more interested in just how the game plays and looks. But this is Capcom, and these guys have been around for a while, doing this for forever. They're kind of the leaders in many ways. And how do you have a character that's one of my favorites? You know, for a Chun-Li fan, they go, oh my gosh, my favorite character, and she looks horrible. And that wasn't the only one. There are a few other characters that looked really bad too. And then all the Marvel characters at the time looked very nice. So there was talk that they had to make the Marvel characters look good because Disney was putting so much money into it, and they wanted to make the Capcom characters look bad to make the Marvel characters look even better. And little dumb stories like that would pop up, and who knows. But yeah, people were upset by things like that. There was the fear of new. The goal now is to attract not only your old audience that's fighting game seasoned veterans, but also new players that wouldn't necessarily play. And fighting games are very hard to get people to join because they have a very high learning curve. You sit down with someone that knows what they're doing, you're just going to get beat up for 20 years, you know, it's what it feels like, until you kind of start learning the game. So it turns people off a lot more, and it's kind of a niche audience. So they want to make it more accessible. And one of the ways to do that is to make the characters easier to play, make the combos easier to do, and they do that by, like, simplifying inputs. So, like, instead of having to push, like, forward, down, and then down and forward at the same time, and then press punch, you can do the same move, the uppercut that Street Fighter is famous for. You can do that same move just by pressing down twice and a button. And things like that, shortcuts. And you can do a combo just by pressing the one punch button over and over again. Things like that would scare those that are already established. They go, I don't want them to dumb down our game so much that it's not fun to play anymore, or that everybody can win. So, there was a lot of fear about that, and Capcom actually found a pretty good medium there. You can turn those kind of parts of the game on, but if you use those shortcuts, you're not doing the most optimal things. So those that resort to those kind of things won't really do well. It's more just to keep people that are playing at the very beginning to play, and you can turn them all off. So you can, like, when playing in tournament, actually play the game more like the competitive scene would imagine it. So I think that they've ultimately overridden that problem. And they've updated Chun-Li's and a lot of other characters' faces, too, so they've kind of gotten over that hump as well. But there have been more. There's no X-Men. There are no X-Men in Marvel vs. Capcom, and X-Men are, to Marvel vs. Capcom, almost pretty much like what, you know, Ryu and Chun-Li are to the Street Fighter series. And that was something that people are upset about. It's more than likely because of the whole feud with Fox and Disney and Marvel, and how the rights to certain characters are up in the air and things like that. And that's this whole convoluted story. But the bottom line for us is that no X-Men in Marvel, so no Wolverine, no Magneto, none of these iconic characters that have won Evo before and been, like, you know, such part of the Marvel franchise, they're gone. And so that was upsetting. And then when one of the developers was in an interview one time, and this was brought up to him, and he had this, I don't blame him. I think that he messed up when he was speaking. He didn't think about it enough, but he had this very, like, kind of cookie-cutter answer where he said, well, you know, characters like Magneto that aren't in the game right now are, you know, players know those characters because of the way they are played, because of the way the moves they can do. So they're not as much of a character with identity as they are a function. And he called them functions, and that kind of, like, put people off really bad. They say, no, because these guys are hardcore. They have, like, almost, like, this type of relationship and in their admiration and their likings of these characters. So to simplify them down to say, oh, well, there are other characters that kind of play like them, and that'll make everyone happy. There are a lot of fans of the series that only care about the characters because they think they're cool, because they identify them with them in some way. And so a lot of the community kind of felt a little betrayed by that. And the person that said it, his name is Combo Fiend, he is a player first. He came from the player base and grew up, like, you know, playing in arcades and being really good, specifically at the Marvel vs. Capcom franchise, but also a very good all-around fighting game player. So he's been there, and he was kind of like our representative as like the green or the grassroots kind of side of things, going into work for Capcom, going into to, like, be on the other side and have our influence. So for him to say something like that was kind of disheartening, and that was another kind of strike against the series when he said that. And again, I think it was something that he just didn't think through, and he should have just said more something along the lines of, you know, it's unfortunate we can't get every character that everybody wants, but hopefully, you know, like, we'll be able to appease as many people as we can. We have a really exciting, you know, roster planned, and then we'll have, you know, DLC characters coming out in the future, and hopefully everyone can find a character for them. Something a little more safe and acknowledging like that. But instead, he kind of said what he said, and it wasn't a great look. So it's just been a lot of things like that have plagued this game's, I guess, pre-life, you know, like while it's in the womb here, and we're getting to September where it's actually going to be released. People have just had reasons to dislike it. And Capcom, it's in development. You got to remember, it's in a game in development. They're not done, and they're showing you what they're doing. So you got to take things with a grain of salt. But people love to get on social media and get on their soapboxes. And if there's a thing that everybody likes, it's like in the main stage spotlight. If you can like cast some kind of a judgment on that, then that automatically implies that you're big, you know, and that you have some authority. At least that's what it feels like. And so people love to find the biggest, best thing, and you see this like with what we do with celebrities and tabloids and whatnot, and just try to spit fire at it in any way they can because they have problems in self-esteem and things like that. So there's a lot of that that makes it feel worse. But yes, Marvel vs. Capcom has had some hiccups and some bumps in the road and some pretty big ways on its way to release.
Are you looking forward to the release of this game, or are you still like, are you with the, you know, the, I guess the commenters at this point?
No, I'm looking forward to it. Like I said earlier, I'm not necessarily a Marvel player. I'll dabble, and I played Marvel versus Capcom 3 when it came out just because there was so much hype around it. But this game, I'll play it, and I think for me it's going to be more of a thing that I need to know the essentials so that I can write about it. But I don't know that I'll necessarily take the competitive route and try to play it competitively and travel for it and try to win there. It's just really not necessarily my pace. Now, that might change. I might play it a little more with a little more intent and realize that it is. Who knows? But I like to invest most of my time into Street Fighter. So I'll learn it. I'll definitely play it. I'll be around, and I'll be watching it. And these are some of the most fun games to watch because they're just so chaotic and all over the place. And the crowd really tends to get into it and really get behind it. So yeah, it'll definitely be a great addition to the fighting game community. And as a writer, it's going to generate and continue to generate more news and more excitement, bring more people into the community. And that's one of the things that I'm most excited about for Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite.
Thank you, John, for giving me a rundown about the Marvel vs. series and your thoughts on Capcom's upcoming release, Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite. For those listening, check out eventhubs.com for articles by John and the latest fighting game news and trends.
This has been the Mason Vera Payne Show. Thanks for listening. Can't wait to hear more? Subscribe, rate, and comment at masonverapayne.com. That's MASONVERAPAINE.com. Also, follow Mason on Facebook and Twitter at Mason Vera Payne. That's all one word. And don't forget to share the show with your friends.